the show Friday morning. Evan Gray. A little bit rainy in parts of the province, and rain is expected off and on through areas in the province throughout the day today and tomorrow, which is, of course, not great news for farmers. And has been the case over the last few days. We start off another busy morning. Lots going on. So first and foremost, the governor of Utah, Spencer Cox, just in a live newscast made this announcement.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We got him. On the evening of September 11th, a family member of Tyler Robinson reached out to a family friend who contacted the Washington County Sheriff's Office with information that Robinson had confessed to them or implied that he had committed the incident. This information was relayed to the Utah County Sheriff's Office and scene investigators at Utah Valley University. This information was also conveyed to the FBI. Investigators reviewed additional video footage from UVU surveillance and identified Robinson arriving on UVU campus in a gray Dodge Challenger at approximately 8:29 a.m. on September 10th, in which he is observed on video in a plain maroon t-shirt, light-colored shorts, a black hat with a white logo, and light-colored shoes. When encountered in person by investigators in Washington County on September 12th, in the early morning hours, Robinson was observed in consistent clothing with those surveillance images.
Okay, so that news is that Tyler Robinson, a 22-year-old, has been arrested and believed to be the suspect that was responsible for the murder, for the assassination of Charlie Kirk. So this is literally just unfolding news. The news conference just actually wrapping up right now. So we will be talking a little bit more about this coming up just after 9 o'clock. So that's one of many things we're following. But we've got a full show today. Lots of different things, lots of different topics, including a new study that shows people are replacing their oven with their phone. DoorDash, Uber Eats on the rise in Canada. The food professor, Sylvain Charlebois, will join me later in the show to discuss. And because it's Friday, all of our regular segments will be here today. Bugs and Hugs at 10. It's Eating Time with Belton at 11. Green and White prognostications coming up at 12. So we are going to get going this morning. The other story, or one of the other stories that we've been following this week, is the fact that around the globe, we have seen whether it's wars, whether it's airstrikes, whether it's incursions on airspace that shouldn't be happening, there seems to be a lot going on the world stage when it comes to geopolitics. Tuesday, for example, an Israeli airstrike targeted Hamas leadership in Doha, Qatar, killing several members. They reportedly were meeting to discuss a U.S. ceasefire proposal. So this makes it a bit of a major jump from the previous attack in the Middle East because, as many are pointing out, Qatar is an ally of the United States. Many will point out, though, that they have had ties to terrorist organizations in the past. Many suspect they still do. That, along with the fact that Russian drones were shot down over Polish airspace, so a completely different part of the globe and a completely different war. But nonetheless, there is lots happening there, which is a great time to bring in our guest, Dr. Christian Loyprecht, who is an author, a professor at Royal Military College in Queen's University, editor of the Canadian Military Journal, senior fellow at McDonnell Laurier Institute, and a visiting fellow at the Wilfrid Martin Center for European Studies in Brussels. He is the fellow to join us and talk about this. Dr. Loyprecht, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Good morning, Evan.
So you've been obviously following all of these developments. Let's start with Israel. And can you just give me your thoughts on what we saw here with that strike in Doha?
Well, I think we see an Israel that is increasingly emboldened to use hard power to achieve its interests and its objectives. And an Israel that the United States is either unwilling or unable to constrain. I think there's also a sense of urgency by Israel because, as you know, some countries have said that they would, at the UN General Assembly this week or next, announce that they would recognize a state of Israel. And I think what we've seen in response to that in recent week is an escalation by Israel to try to, or particularly Benjamin Netanyahu and his government, to create facts on the ground that would avoid a two-state solution, and that should come as no surprise because, of course, Benjamin Netanyahu has staked the last 30 years of his political career on avoiding a two-state solution. But what's particularly interesting is that the projectiles in Qatar were fired from, it appears to be 15 Israeli Defense Force Air Force jets. And so that means they had to actually maneuver into position in order to deliver those precise projectiles. And so that means, you know, Qatar is a very long way from Israel. They must have somehow been able to fly there and fly back without engaging anyone else's air defense, whether that's Iran, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, or Qatar itself. And the other interesting part is, of course, while Qatar is a very small place, and it seems Qatar, despite all, it has U.S. troops there, it has Turkish troops there, it has its own military, seems vulnerable because, of course, it was hit by Iran in its counterstrike against the United States after it was attacked by Israel and the U.S., and now it is hit by Israel. So Qatar is looking a little bit humbled, and that's dangerous in the Middle East because losing face in the Middle East is probably the single worst thing that can happen to you. So it puts Qatar in a very difficult position.
Dr. Christian Loyprecht is my guest. Are they truly uninvolved in this? I mean, I've seen reports referring to them as an innocent third party. Others will point to the fact that they have had ties to and have harbored terrorists in the past. Your thoughts on that?
Well, Qatar runs this very independent foreign policy. It tries to run it so it has, for the region, relative good, harmonious relations with Iran. It can at times have difficult relations with Saudi Arabia. It does not always see eye to eye with the United Arab Emirates, and it's been very proactive at shaping the world's image of itself and using its money from its extensive liquid natural gas wealth in particular to invest that in ways that sort of strategically asserts the interests of a country of less than a million people. So Qatar is always a player that is sort of that tries to assert itself and its own interests apart from those of other players in the region. And it's kind of carved out a bit of a role as like a broker for itself. It often in these conflicts plays sort of a quasi-mediating role. At the same time, Qatar gets involved in many of these conflicts and has a clear interest at stake. And in the case of Hamas, I mean, it's the interpretation is difficult, but Qatar has hosted, of course, parts of the Hamas leadership, in part because the U.S. and Israel have always said we need someone to talk to and we can't talk to the people in Gaza. And the people, the Hamas leadership in Qatar tends to often be more moderate than the more hardline folks in Gaza. So going after that leadership, yes, takes out some of the more radical people, but it also takes out some of the moderates in the process. So whatever conclusion you draw, I think it is certainly clear that this will not help the ability to get a ceasefire.
Does this jeopardize the support Israel gets from many countries, including Canada, when we see a mission like this carried out?
I mean, it's already jeopardized the support of a number of members of the European Union, although not the European Union itself and not of some of the largest members of the European Union. But it does put Western countries in a conflicting position, both because some of the norms that that Israel seems to be violating, some of those norms that Western democracies hold dear on the one hand, and at the same time, for instance, the use of violence to outside of your own borders. I mean, Israel has basically started conflicts with half a dozen countries effectively violating their sovereignty in the neighborhood. That would be difficult, I think, to endorse from a democratic perspective. And of course, it makes it difficult to, when that furthers the humanitarian suffering that the world is seeing in Gaza, that makes it much more difficult for countries such as Canada to continue to support Israel, notwithstanding, of course, that this whole conflict is the result of Hamas and that concessions in that conflict would effectively amount to rewarding a terrorist organization.
Dr. Christian Leuprecht is my guest, Royal Military College and Queen's University. I know we're short on time, but can we go across the globe quickly? Midweek this week, we heard about an unprecedented overnight operation in which Poland, backed by NATO allies, shot down multiple Russian drones that violated its airspace on Wednesday. Was this a test by Russia?
Absolutely. It was a test on the one hand of NATO's response system operationally. How would NATO respond in terms of how would it engage those drones? When would it detect those drones? Would it engage with ground, with air assets? What are the communications behind this? Russia has today started its largest annual military exercise and is holding that in Belarus. So it has a lot of signals intelligence assets in place to watch exactly what NATO is doing. And, of course, it was a test of NATO resolve and NATO unity because everybody wants to see to what extent NATO can come together. And instead of just issuing harsh words Russia continuing to cross red lines, as it has repeatedly over the last 2 weeks and throughout this conflict, whether there's actually going to be concrete pushback. So Russia will always test NATO. It will try to divide NATO, and it will continue to push red lines until there's concrete pushback. And I think it should make it clear to everybody that the idea that Putin is looking to get some sort of a ceasefire is completely delusional.
So maybe just quickly on that question then, Dr. Leuprecht, before you leave, does this escalate things and do we see NATO get more involved now in this conflict?
Well, certainly this is what Russia is trying to push. What it's trying to demonstrate is that it has many options on the escalation ladder that can create strategic dilemmas for NATO and NATO member countries in the air, land, maritime, space, and cyber domains. And that despite being maxed out conventionally, Russia is an adversary for NATO and NATO member countries to be taking very seriously. Today it's Poland, tomorrow it could be Latvia, and tomorrow it could be armed drones in Latvia, where we have 2,000 Canadian Armed Forces troops.
Dr. Leuprecht, thank you so much for your time this morning.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Always appreciate having Dr. Christian Leuprecht on the program, professor at Royal Military College, Queen's University. He's also a senior fellow at the MacDonald Laurier Institute and a great guest to discuss some of these geopolitical conflicts and wars that are happening in the world. Okay, we'll take a break when we come back onto the topic of the arrest of Charlie Kirk's killer. That was announced this morning. A 22-year-old by the name of Tyler Robinson has been arrested. More as we continue this morning here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.